Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. It is always a joy to talk to our guy, Dan Pompey, Bleacher Report and The Athletic, the Hall of Famer himself. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Morning, Dan.
I'm great, fellas. Good to be with you today.
Well, every time you turn around, there's a new national guy talking about how awful Mitchell Trubisky is. It's apparently just looking at the record isn't working nationally, and we know that that is exactly what Matt Nagy said when asked to evaluate Mitchell Trubisky earlier in the week, and he said, look at his one-loss record, look at the fact that we're winning, and that got Phil Emery in trouble when he used that as a way of calling Jay Cutler elite, that he was a winning quarterback. What's your take on it? Is Mitch a controversial figure? Is there a reason there isn't more national support?
I could understand why you look at the last three games and you see all the incompletions and some of the inaccuracy, and you say, well, maybe he's not developing at the same pace that some of the other young quarterbacks have developed at. But the bottom line is he's done, for the most part, what he needs to do to win the games. Obviously, he's playing with an elite defense and he's got some other things going for him. But I think the Bears are not unhappy with his development up to this point, nor should they be. I think he has done some things that are signs of progress, even when he hasn't had the best game like last week. And progress is not always a straight line. You know, you zig and zag sometimes, and sometimes you step forward, and sometimes you step back, and you step forward again, and step back two times. And, you know, that's what we're seeing with Mitch Trubisky. I think you have to keep in mind, too, he's had Allen Robinson out, which I think is a factor. There have been some offensive line issues, Kyle Long being out. All of that plays a factor in his development. But I think overall, you know, it's been okay. I mean, really, the true tests have yet to come for Mitch Trubisky, though. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn a lot more about him in the second half of the season when he goes against teams in the NFC North and some of the better teams in the league that he's going to be playing against. And he's going to be called on to maybe try to win a game in the fourth quarter. And that's when we'll really figure out where he's at in his development.
Dan, the other day, Matt Nagy said that when he had a conversation with Trubisky about some numbers and some things, he said, okay, just look at the scoreboard. Worry about that. We will evaluate you based on wins and losses. Was he taking the practical approach to evaluating a young quarterback, or was he supplying a built-in excuse?
Well, you know, I think when you talk about Tom Brady, everyone calls him the greatest quarterback of all time. Why? Because he's got the championships, right? People judge quarterbacks by wins and losses. It's not always the best way to judge them, though. It's not always the most fair way. I think we still consider Dan Marino one of the very, very best of all time, even though he's got no championships. So, you know, I think while the wins and losses are a factor, and certainly, you can't have a great team with a bad quarterback, there's more to it than that. And you'd like to see some other signs of development growth with Trubisky. I think up to this point, too, he's been helped a lot by his ability to run the ball. You know, I think even it's helped him in his passing because it's forced defenses to kind of keep an eye on that, sometimes even with a spy. So that opens up some things in the passing game. And that's, you know, he needs to take advantage of that when that happens. But I think overall, there's more to it than wins and losses, really, there are.
Dan, when we look at the Bears finally getting into division play, and it's been a while, and we've waited a long time to figure this out, what changes? I mean, what's interesting to me is the idea that these teams are different than they were earlier in the year already. Certainly we're seeing that with the Lions having traded away a player.
Yeah, I think that happens over the course of a season. You know, teams evolve and they trade players, they add players, and the big thing is players get hurt or they come back. I think the Vikings are a team that is starting to get healthy now, and they're starting to get players back. They've got Dalvin Cook back, and they've got, they seem to be ready to take off to me. So the Bears are going to have to, I think, play better, especially on offense, than they did in the first half of the season, if they want to stay with these teams, if they want to put these teams away. And, you know, they're going to have to win some of these games. They're going to have to beat the Vikings, probably. They're probably going to have to beat the Lions at least once. And, you know, the Lions have really had the Bears' number. I think they've won 9 of the last 10 against the Bears, which, you know, really is a trend that is crazy in Bears' history, because the Bears, for a long time, had the Vikings' number. It was the opposite. So, you know, they're going to have to go out and prove some things and continue to improve if they're going to get where they want to be this year.
After 8 games with the Bears in first place at 5-3, Dan, what's been the most surprising aspect of this team from your perspective?
I would say how good the secondary has been off the top of my head, David. I think, you know, that was the one area that I had some question marks about and some concerns, and it's really been solid. I think the cornerback play has just been really excellent. I mean, Kyle Fuller, to me, is playing considerably better than he did it last year. I think he's playing at a Pro Bowl level, and, you know, I think there was some question whether or not he would do that, because he really only had the one really good year prior to this season. Prince Amukamara has been very consistent. Bryce Callahan has been excellent. I don't know if there's been a better nickel corner in the league than him. Eddie Jackson stepped up, just big play guy. I mean, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level to me. And Amos has done kind of the same thing he's done last year, which was play pretty well. So some of that probably is a function of what's going on up front, but you have to give those guys credit. They've made the plays, and I think whereas last year there weren't the big plays, the interceptions, the takeaways in the back end that you're getting now, they're getting them this year, and that's made a big difference.
Obviously, with Mac coming back, with Allen Robinson coming back, you think like, oh, this is going to help immensely. They're also getting other guys back that we haven't really spent any time on, and you know, I don't know if Ben Broniker coming back changes the fate of humanity, but it's another depth player. You know, certainly getting the offensive line healthier. Kyle Long is still out, but he's about the only one. Are the Bears going to get better as they get these guys back? Do you project them to be? I mean, obviously, Khalil Mack's a hell of a player.
Yeah, and you know, Robinson's supposed to be their best wide receiver too.
Right.
So he hasn't shown it consistently up to this point, but if he gets on a tear, you know, that's really going to, I think, help things, because it seems like some of the other receivers have kind of stepped up recently too. With, you know, Gabriel has been consistent all year, but I think Anthony Miller has got something in him that he's just starting to show that really could be pretty special. And Trey Burton obviously has been consistent. Weapon, especially in the red zone. So you've got a lot of weapons there. If Robinson can fulfill the expectations the Bears had for him when they signed him to that contract. And then, of course, I mean, Mac, you know, he changes everything if he can play like he did early in the season. My concern with that would be, you know, is he 100% healthy or close to 100% where he's going to have that same explosion that he had? You know, it would be a great mistake, in my opinion, to bring him back too soon and have him not be everything he can be for not only this week but the rest of the season. So if I were the Bears, I'd be very conservative with bringing him back and making sure that he's everything that he was early in the year before you get him back out there.
Dan, that Rams-Saints game sure looked like an NFC Championship preview. Anybody else in the conference kind of are we sleeping on? Do you see making a run? Because there's always that one team maybe at midseason that starts to get things together.
Yeah, you know, certainly I think there are possibilities out there. I think, you know, the Panthers are one team that you have to kind of look out for. You know, they've been there before. They're only one game off the pace, really. So they can be a team that I think makes a strong second-half push. I think the Vikings are a team that's going to make a strong second-half push. You know, they're 5-3-1 right now, but I think they're a team, you know, like I said, guys are coming back. They're getting it together. They have the potential to really be strong in the second half. I would say, you know, those are the two teams that are the most likely suspects to me to really come on, but certainly there's, you know, a pack of teams that are kind of in that range of 4-4. I mean, some of those could pop up too. Even the Eagles are a team that we know what they did last year, and certainly they have the ability to jump up if they can put things together.
All right, Danny, thank you, buddy. Great catching up.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, guys, thank you.
That's Dan Pompey. He, of course, with Bleacher Report and The Athletic. His name is writ in the Professional Football Hall of Fame.
I agree with him. The Bears secondary, to me, has been maybe the most surprising aspect of that defense, which has carried the team so far.
I want to talk about that a little bit, because didn't they pay for that?
Well, by paying Kyle Fuller?
By paying Kyle Fuller, yeah. By giving Prince a new deal?
Yeah.
By drafting Eddie Jackson?
I guess you're right. I think, though, it surprised me that Kyle Fuller has almost played better after getting paid, which is something you seldom see in pro sports.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Very interesting to contemplate what has happened, what could happen, what will happen with the rest of the Bears season.
Yeah, we'll start Sunday against the Lions. I think this is an opportunity for the Bears to prove that they were not a fluke in the first half. And I think that should be not necessarily the rallying cry, but I think that a lot of fans are curious. I think a lot of observers are curious. I think that if they go into this game, you know, with a bit of an edge because of some people doubting them, all the better. I do think that's it's appropriate. They have not been a team that's earned the benefit of the doubt yet. They've earned a midseason spot atop the NFC North standings, yeah. Period. But they've played better than expected. Mm. A big reason is because, as we mentioned, you heard from Prince Mukamara, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, Adrian Amos. That's a pretty good secondary. And I think the guy that gets overlooked a lot is what Dan Pompey pointed out. Bryce Callahan has played as well, yep, as any nickel corner in the league.
And Bryce Callahan didn't come with a big price tag. You know, you got to remember their corners were brought back on pretty good contracts. Prince got paid. And Kyle Fuller, my goodness, 4-year, $56 million deal that he signed with Green Bay. And the Bears did match it and did bring him back. And he has been worth the money. And I would argue, David, and we talked a little bit to Dave Wanstead about it earlier in the week, I would argue that that's the best thing that could have happened for Kyle Fuller, that he was in a scheme where he kind of found his way. He struggled initially under Vic Fangio. Then he started playing well, really well last year. He gets the big money deal. And while he would have helped the Packers, it would have been a different scheme. He might not be playing as well right now as he is with the Bears. The comfort of being in the same scheme, the idea that they went out and got the pass rusher, I know that hasn't mattered in the last few games, but the fact of the matter is that he has benefited from staying where
he's
at.
He should be grateful, yeah, because the Bears have a pass rush the Packers don't, and every defensive back, every cornerback is only as good as its pass rush. I mean, you can have a lot of skills that you never may be able to utilize if you don't have a pass rush. Kyle Fuller made the smart move in returning to Chicago, and I think Ryan Pace made the wise move in, one of his many in the offseason in bringing him back. This defense is, was good already. Khalil Mack coming back on Sunday, I think, will give them an opportunity to create some more turnovers against a quarterback that can get hot. You know, Matthew Stafford is 10-6 against the Bears' lifetime. This isn't the same team, but he has had some success against this team, so you can't take that lightly. Lions are a state of kind of upheaval still. They have a first-year head coach. They fired their special teams coach this week, Molly. That's, yeah, something you rarely see, eight games in, but you have a first-year head coach, and they're experiencing some growing pains that the Bears just haven't yet. And I think that's interesting, too, because if this game is close, special teams, you got to think that's an area where the Bears haven't been great either. But that is one less thing to worry about if you're the Bears.
312-644-6767. We have a lot of people who wanted to check in on the 5 at 5. We'll start with Ed in Humboldt Park. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Good morning, guys. My name is Ed. I'm a retired Chicago police sergeant working a security job at Humboldt Park. I listen to your show 4 times a week. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Joe, you actually know me through my son, Mike, who went to the Illinois Center of Broadcasting. But anyway, I'd like to comment on the Addison Russell situation. I think that after he serves his suspension, you bring him back. Hopefully he has a good start to the season. Now he gains value. Then you trade him in June or July with someone like Happ for a quality mid reliever. And I voluntarily stated my past occupation for a reason, because sometimes we have information that other people or the public does not have access to. If you go back in time to the Starling Castro era, he had a similar allegation against him, and suddenly the allegation and investigation suddenly disappeared, and there were some very, very strong rumors that the Cubs aided the victim and assisted Castro in getting him through this. I think that Russell needs to come out voluntarily, apologize for what he did, apologize for embarrassing himself, embarrassing the Cubs organization and the fans, and say that he's going to seek help, because any man who hits a woman is not the man he proclaims himself to be.
And I think
now, if you take Russell, who gains some value with Ian Happ, you trade him for a good quality mid reliever. Another subject, real quick, is the Blackhawks. I think they made Quenneville the scapegoat. I think the real person at fault here is the general manager, who made four bad moves. Number one, he got rid of Saad. He got rid of Jalmerson. He got rid of Panarin. And then to recover, he brought Saad back. Saad's an excellent player. I love to have him on our team. But the time clock is ticking, and he doesn't have very many years left. Our whole team somehow depends on Duncan, Keith, Taze, and Kane. And we need other contributions by other young players. And the other thing I'd like to comment on is the Corey Crawford situation. I don't think Crawford's ever going to be the same after his concussion. Once again, with some inside information, I'm hearing rumors that he did not suffer his concussion while playing hockey. He was involved in an at-fault auto accident, but nobody wants to say that.
Got a lot of rumors there, Ed. Yeah, got a lot of speculation.
Ed's got a lot of connections. Thanks for all the...
Yeah. Look, the Starlin Castro reference is, you know, the Cubs did reach out and try to help rehabilitate Starlin Castro in terms of had a maturity issue. I don't know the specifics.
But that wasn't a domestic situation. It might have been worse.
It might have been worse. But you know what, Molly? The thing is that if there was evidence there, it wasn't proven, and he did not serve a suspension. What makes this different in terms of the Addison Russell situation is he is serving a suspension. To some degree, he was found guilty of something, of doing something that violated the policy. So that is, you know, Starlin Castro never faced charges. So I think that may be similar in terms of maturity, but I don't think that in terms of the penalty, it's comparable.
Let's squeeze in Mike. He's waited patiently in Rockford. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Morning, Mike.
Mike, apparently not as patient as I imagined him to be. Let's get to Joe.
You can't say that first, because you never know.
Well,
you didn't really
bad.
Know.
I mean, I felt bad that he waited as long as he did. And yeah,
no,
I mean,
he did not wait as long
never,
as he did.
Never
Mike
assume anything.
Went to you get make his out toast.
Of, you make an ass out of you and me.
He's waiting, you know, patiently. He went to get his toast and came back.
Maybe
like,
he's
hello?
Eating some delicious Dunkin' like me and Dustin right now.
Okay.
For instance.
Got a coffee going right here, buddy.
Bless them.
Mullay and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Jerry DiNardo is our college football expert. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Good morning, Jerry.
I'm doing great. Good morning.
So I was, you know, obviously enjoyed the Northwestern Notre Dame game and thought it was cool to see the Irish in Evanston, and understood that it was, you know, a difficult task for the Cats, and yet they did okay. They kept the game close. I thought it was respectable the way things came out. The really good news is that Iowa ended up losing, if you're a Northwestern fan, and now the Cats are in the driver's seat. They need to win two of their last three games here, and they've got Minnesota and Illinois, and now the big one, they go to Iowa, and they could really make an impact. But I don't know if you care about the odds or any of that stuff, Jerry, but I always think it's interesting because – when you look at the Vegas odds, the idea is not whether the team's going to win by that amount, but how people perceive it, how they will bet it. And it's 10.5, the line. I mean, that's a huge line. The Cats are probably going to win the Big Ten West, and yet they're going to have a hard time in Iowa, according to the fine people of Las Vegas.
You know, this is kind of like a psychological test for Northwestern. I mean, when you looked at the schedule before the season started, you know, I think we were all excited about the Notre Dame game, but, you know, it was between Wisconsin and Iowa. How's that going to play out? And then Northwestern's in the hunt and the favorite right now to win the West, and they've got to play Notre Dame in between Wisconsin and Iowa. So how does Fitz get that team ready? So to your point, Molly, now Northwestern can lose to Iowa, beat Minnesota and Illinois, and still go to Indianapolis. Now, is that crazy or not?
That's crazy.
And I think that's one of the reasons the spread is the way it is. Maybe people think, you know, well, will Northwestern be as fired up if they had to win the Iowa game to go to the West? And if you look at their season, they have a great win against Purdue. They kind of go south a little bit. Pressure's on them just to have a good year, not to win the West, but just to have a good year. And they rebound like champs. So I got to tell you, I don't know what Fitz is doing psychologically, but I hope he's getting some sleep.
This segment with Jerry DiNardo brought to you by Cassidy Tire and Service.
He'll sleep better, Jerry, if he knows he can run the football against Iowa. And I think, you know, Isaiah Bowser's, his emergence has been very impressive in terms of since Jeremy Larkin went down. I'm surprised that they relied on him as much as they have, and yet he's steady. He's not spectacular, but I think he gives them an element in the running game that they lacked. Clayton Thorson, I think, you know, can continue to improve. He needs a big game against Iowa. If they do beat Iowa, able to pull off the upset, what will they have done right?
Well, probably make Iowa defend the run. But, David, I believe nowadays football, you don't have to run the ball to win and to win big. Because of the spread formation, because of man coverage, the equation in college football has changed. You still have to make the defense defend the run. But you don't have to come out of games like you did a generation ago saying we had to rush for 200 or 250. You just have to make them defend the run. And if Northwestern can do that with the run, then it's up to Iowa to defend the pass. And that's basically how college football is going right now, and it's no different for Northwestern. So the short answer to your question, Mick McCall, offensive coordinator, has to make them defend the run and then probably win the game with the pass.
When we look at Michigan and see the way that they handled Penn State and the fact that they dominated that game and really just, you know, they're improving as the year goes on. Obviously, they move into the playoff here. If they can handle Ohio State, then it looks like they'll be there at the West at the end. Excuse me. Can Northwestern? They were up 17-0 again. If Northwestern gets there, can they even compete with those guys? I mean, this team is getting so much better.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question they can compete with them. I mean, this is the great thing about divisional play. You know, in the ordinary, if it wasn't divisional play, would Northwestern be, you know, would they be in the hunt for Indianapolis? No. I mean, they'd be in the middle of the pack. I mean, they could be what? They could be a 6-7 team win and go to the championship. And they're not a better team than Michigan. They don't have to be. They just have to be better that one day in Indianapolis. And usually in these cases, the better team has to help them. So Michigan could turn it over. Michigan could wind up in Indianapolis fat and happy and think they just have to show up. And Northwestern could be razor sharp. And you just never know what happens in these championship games. So they have a chance, absolutely, if it's those two teams. And right now it looks like it's going to be those two.
Oh, so Ohio State, you know, they have Michigan State, and certainly they had to rally to beat Nebraska. Are you basically, along with a lot of people, and not giving them a whole lot of hope for the rest of the season? Where are you with Ohio State?
No, I'm probably overstating things because that's what I do naturally. You know, David, you watch him on tape against Nebraska, and I've been disappointed in the CFP this year, their rankings. But, you know, they're about where they deserve to be. Now, I haven't seen all the teams around the country. They're still not playing their best. And so if they don't play their best, or if they don't play better than they're playing right now, I think they'll have a hard time beating Michigan. If they don't start playing better and beat Michigan, and now we go down that SEC road where Alabama loses in the championship game and Georgia goes and Alabama goes and Clemson goes and Notre Dame goes, that's a disaster, I think, for the college football playoffs and certainly for the Big Ten. So they just have to start playing better. They ran the ball a little bit better against Nebraska, but they're not as good as I think we expect them to be, and I don't think they're half as good as they thought they would be.
What did you make of the score of that Minnesota Illinois game? That was 55-34 or something. I mean, I didn't know Illinois had 55 points in them.
You know, Molly, when you're building a program, I mean, this happened to me in Indiana where Purdue just ran through us like we weren't even there. I mean, it was pitiful. When you're building a program like Lovey, I'm going to tell you, the extremes are going to happen. Everyone has to understand, one coach only controls half the equation, okay? So maybe Minnesota laid an egg. Maybe Minnesota wasn't ready to play. And maybe this was the best game Illinois played. I mean, that's what happens when you're at the bottom of conferences. Illinois gave up, what, 700 yards or something to Maryland? Mm-hmm. Is that some crazy number, right? And then they do that to Minnesota. When you are where Illinois is in their building process, and when you took over an absolute train wreck like Lovey has taken over, you are going to have these crazy swings. And I don't know how else to explain it. And I am surprised that PJ fired Rod Smith as defensive coordinator. Right. That seems to me like a panic move, and I'm really surprised PJ did that.
You know, Lovie Smith changed defensive coordinators or lost his, too, when Hardy Nickerson left, and he took over play calling duties for one game. Is that going to continue, Jerry? Is that smart for a head coach to do that? Because Lovie did that once for 1 year here when he was the head coach of the Bears and didn't go so well. There's always those divided responsibilities, and yet that may be the smartest thing for Illinois. It's hard to say.
Well, yeah, I think it's two questions. Will he finish it this year? And did it have anything to do with their performance against Minnesota? And, you know, that's hard to kind of look at yourself and say, geez, I must have made a difference. But I think you have to do that. And if he feels like he did make a difference, he certainly should finish out a year. What I'm hoping Lovey does is, I don't care about this year, I hope he does whatever he thinks is best. But just like he found Rod Smith on offense, this is a college offensive coordinator. It's not a pro guy. Find the best college defensive coordinator that you can possibly find as good as Rod Smith on defense. Be a CEO, oversee the whole thing. You have a wealth of experience. You're going to play well at homes in recruiting. Get an expert recruiting. Hire someone from Alabama's back room to come to Illinois and maybe update if it needs updating. I shouldn't say this. If they make them a state of the art recruiting program, get a state of the art defensive coordinator that spends his life in college football, let him and Rod Smith run the program in football, and let Lovey woo the recruits in the home and on campus.
Jerry, Wisconsin heads to Penn State in what looked like it was going to be a big game when the schedule came out, but now it's just sort of another game. It doesn't seem as significant as maybe we thought it might be.
Correct. Two teams that are underachieving based on our preseason expectations.
Right.
But the difference for me is one lines up in the spread, which gives the playmakers it does have to make a play. The other lines up in an old I formation. They can't throw the ball deep. They hardly can throw it at all. And they give the Penn State defense a chance just to pack the box, just like Mike Hankowitz did when Northwestern played Wisconsin. I think the way it's gone for these two teams going into this game, Penn State has the advantage. It's at Penn State. Let their playmakers make some plays and try to get out of there with an offensive victory.
Purdue keeps winning, Jerry. It's surprising. Nobody. I know it's not a surprise to you. Jeff Brohm's coaching job is, I think they have an opportunity here now to win their final three games. That includes Wisconsin. Is he a Big Ten Coach of the Year candidate?
Boy, you would sure think so, right? I was sold on him the first day I was at practice 2 years ago, just like Scott Frost at Nebraska. But I thought they were going to take a step back this year. Just they lost some defensive guys and all that. I find what he's done extraordinary. And how about the crowds? I mean, how many teams can go from empty stadiums to full stadiums? I mean, there's usually some transition there. I give all this credit to these Purdue fans. They have shown up in a way that I never thought you could show up that quickly in the second year of a coach's tenure. So, yeah, he's in the conversation for sure. He's probably in the conversation for National Coach of the Year if enough people are paying attention to Purdue.
Jerry, we'll let you go. Northwestern again. If they do win the Big Ten West, how significant of an achievement is it for the program in a year where they've lost at home to Akron, where they've had some uneven results, where you know they're not doing great outside the conference, and where, hey, let's be honest, if Purdue is this good, if Wisconsin rebounds Iowa, I mean, maybe they don't get another bite at this apple. It's an opportunity for them to win the Big Ten West, but how significant is it?
Well, you know, it's significant, but I have to tell you, I think it's overdue, to be honest with you. I mean, Fitz's two predecessors won the Big Ten in an environment where it was much harder to win the Big Ten. Randy won it, and Gary Barnett won it. Fitz has more resources than either of those two guys have had in the last two or three years. You know, the West let Wisconsin separate themselves. But other than Wisconsin, you know, so I don't want to say that, Molly, because I think you're putting limitations on him if you say that.
Okay.
I'd say it's a heck of a job that Fitz did. He does a heck of a job every year. But I would expect that Northwestern, especially with Wisconsin coming back to the pack, I would expect Northwestern to be more normally in the conversation for the Western Division hunt. So I think it's a great accomplishment, but I felt like they could have done this a couple years ago. I'm glad they're in the hunt, and I think I'm hoping it's just the start, not the end of where they think they can go.
That's great stuff. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right, see you guys.
That is Jerry DiNardo in this hour on The Score. This segment brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Totally agree with him.
Yeah, I agree with him too.
Because I always felt like saying you wanted to win the division
was aiming low.
Yeah, I think it was aiming low.
Yeah.
And putting Notre Dame game behind that goal, why not be the best in the Big Ten?
Hey, if Wisconsin goes in to Penn State and loses, and somehow Northwestern beats Iowa, all of a sudden this thing, you may well be resting players against Illinois in order to win the Big Ten title. You could really make that a priority for yourself down in Indianapolis.
If that game means nothing.
Well, yeah, just saying. I mean, it's a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
312-644-6767. Mully and Hall on The Score.